What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Kaz. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great Jay Veezy.
How are you doing, Kaz?
I am doing well. I would say we're definitely doing better than the Warriors, who are right now the worst team in the NBA. What is their record at right now?
Their record right now, while I look up Tankathon, it's 2-12.
2-12.
They're bad. And I think we've kind of casually mentioned it before, but I think it deserves a little bit of detail. So as we mentioned a long time ago, they lost Kevin Durant. He's still not playing. He's still injured. He's gone to the Brooklyn Nets. Klay Thompson was injured in the finals last year. And so he's going to be gone for pretty much the whole season. There was some hope that he might be back before the playoffs, but I think the team has already ruled him out for the season. And then I think in the second game of the season, Steph Curry broke his hand, which he needs for shooting, which he's very good at. if you were to like ignore the span of time in the off season and just look at it in terms of like one game to the next, that's like three of their best players just gone within a span of about four games. So that's pretty bad luck for the Warriors. Maybe not that unsurprising considering they made the finals for five straight years, and that's just a lot of extra games to play every season. But I mean, a broken hand is kind of a pretty freak injury. Steph Curry fell on it, so it's not really a fatigue injury. So it's kind of just Draymond Green and D'Angelo Russell and whatever other scrubs they could find. Because as we've mentioned before, it was a team that was very top heavy in the way they were assembled, and it kind of had to be that way just because of the luxury tax and the salary cap. And at this point, I think they're hard capped, which means they cannot acquire any more players, period, because of how much they're paying their current players. A really rough position for a team to be in, because when you lose a player like Kevin Durant, you would think that their salary, you can spend that salary on somebody else. But then they made this trade to get D'Angelo Russell and paid him a lot of money. So now because of that, they've hit this magical hard cap threshold. And because of that, it triggers a certain set of rules that really restricts what they can do to sign even the scrubbiest of scrub players. So they can't go out and get a guy like Carmelo Anthony. They can't go out and get veteran players. They're basically just stuck with who they have. And it's so bad that they're running into, like, they have to field eight players, I think, by rule in a game. And they're getting very close to that because of all the injured guys they have. It's going to be a rough season for the Warriors, but I'm sure the way this all ends up for them is them getting the number one pick and returning next year with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, D'Angelo Russell, Draymond Green, and whoever the number one pick is, possibly James Wiseman. And then they'll just be back to terrorizing everybody else. It's unfortunate they're opening a new stadium this season. I'm saying unfortunate from their perspective. I'm kind of enjoying myself here. It's kind of nice, not just to see the Warriors drop out, but just, a couple other teams have fallen in the West as well. And it just seems like the West is more wide open than it ever has been in years. The Spurs are not doing so well. Portland's not doing so well. They're so desperate that they actually signed Carmelo Anthony. So,
Carmelo comes up once again. And it is brought up an interesting question as to what does it mean for them to go out and sign Carmelo, who is pretty much has been put on a shelf.
Yeah, the question is why. That's just the whole question right there. And it's, you know, Portland is 5-8 right now, which, you know, they were a playoff team last year. They made it to the second round last year. They made it to the conference finals last year. And so if you're quote unquote the second best team in the West, the two top teams in the West last year are now out of playoff position. They're desperate.
We have an article linked in here from 538. It's a pretty good article that kind of details out a few things. But one of the key things I kind of picked out of here as a thing is you're going to be putting Carmelo on a team with a few really good players who are going to draw a lot of defense, which could possibly leave Carmelo, who is relatively a pretty good shooter, open to a lot of just easy shots, because guys will probably not think to defend Carmelo. They'll generally gravitate towards defending the playmakers on that team. So it could be one of these things where you're bringing somebody in who can lull the defense a little bit in who they are by being that player that's been put on the shelf for so long that people don't expect Carmelo to do anything. So they feel like they can double up on their assignments or things like that. And then Carmelo's left open, and then Carmelo maybe hits a few shots, and then maybe the defense has to spread out a little bit more. So it could be this thing where we're asking this question, why do you get Carmelo? And that could also be the answer, because it's Carmelo and people aren't going to expect much. And in that,
I think he's washed.
Yeah. And in that expectation of no expectation, it allows your team to do something good.
Yeah. I feel like shooting is probably one of the last skills to go away. It's, you know, even if he's washed athletically, he should still be able to shoot the ball. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, the way teams focus on playmakers, because the Kings actually were able to beat Portland, I think about a week ago.
Yeah.
By simply just focusing on Damian Lillard and just make sure they shut him down. That was the entire focus of the defense. Even if they don't shut him down, you know, meet him at half court and make him fight for everything he gets, and then make the other players try to beat you. And in that game, the other players couldn't. And Damian Lillard was still great, but that just wasn't enough to win. And that was a much needed win for the Kings at the time, who are now 5-7 after starting the season 0-5. So I'm pretty happy about it. They just beat the Boston Celtics, who are the top team in the East. So after this team looked like, or after the Kings looked like complete ass to start the season, they've lost two of their best players to injury for a significant time, but they are still fighting, and it's making me proud to be a fan of the team again.
Yeah.
All right, one other really weird story from our friend Sunbun. Austin Rivers, now a player for the Houston Rockets, was in a game against the LA Clippers, coached by his dad, Doc Rivers. There was an incident, and then Austin Rivers started lobbying the refs and helped get his dad ejected from the game.
I looked at it. I don't know. I don't know if it's specifically he helped, but he definitely was lobbying,
very wildly gesturing.
Yeah.
Hey
man, you gotta get that man out of here.
The refs, no ref would ever confess to being influenced by a player like that, but I like to think he helped just because this is a bit more of a comical situation.
Yeah.
But it seems like afterwards, both of them were able to laugh about it. But yeah, it just, it's always like basketball is kind of one of those, like it's a game that's kind of restricted to tall people for the most part. So it's just kind of a limited subset of people. You get a lot of families in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, like Steph Curry is the son of an NBA player. Klay Thompson is the son of an NBA player. There's a lot of brothers. There's two sets of twin brothers in the NBA. And like you get a lot of father and son things. So it's always, occasionally you get these weird father son or brother versus brother matchups. And they always end up with, some interesting results because they're generally extra chippy.
Yeah. I think it's in a weird way, it's all fun, but it's all like getting one over on somebody and that love of competition in a weird way. So yeah.
It's definitely close to Thanksgiving. That means you get to rub it in their face for Thanksgiving dinner.
Hell yeah. Speaking of Thanksgiving, we're going to go on over to the NFL and talk about a player who is making a relatively good run to possibly be an MVP. Lamar Jackson for the Baltimore Ravens has been playing some pretty dang good football. And I know because I have to hear about it.
Well, I mean, isn't it at least a little bit fun because it's new and you don't have to hear about people whining about Joe Flacco anymore? It's
no, because my team is bad. I don't want to hear shit. I don't give a fuck.
That's fair. I mean, Lamar Jackson is I think we talked about it like two or three games into the season about like, oh, this guy's doing amazing stuff and he's kind of continuing from last year. And can he keep this going?
Yeah.
We'll just wait and see. Well, we wait and saw. And
for me, as a person who enjoys watching the game, right? I feel like the athletic quarterback is making a resurgence, but I feel like it's making a resurgence in the sense of people who are good at split-second decision-making a lot more so, right? Because the athletic quarterback kind of used to be a guy, he looks upfield a little bit, and then he takes off. And that lasted for a while. But those guys were always at risk of getting hurt because they always kind of defaulted to running with the ball rather than throwing the ball. RG3, who was actually also on this Baltimore Ravens team, was kind of one of those guys. And I think now with guys like Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Lamar Jackson, who are these very athletic quarterbacks, but are also just really, really, really freakishly smart playmakers. Because they'll start to run, like they'll kind of do that thing where they start to run and they extend a play and then they still throw it like 20, 30 yards downfield and, or do these shovel passes that are just amazing. But Lamar Jackson seems to just be really good at it. I also think Russell Wilson is having a really spectacular season as well. I think they've just kind of fallen off in the last few games.
Yeah, those are basically your two MVP candidates at this point, I think. I think there's like, I used to talk about it as if it was like the difference between a running quarterback and a mobile quarterback.
Yeah.
And I think Russell Wilson kind of fits the mold of a mobile quarterback. He's a very good passer. He's elusive, but running is almost never his first option. But Lamar Jackson, I don't even want to call him a running quarterback. I think he's like maybe the first true 50-50 you have no idea what this guy's going to do at any moment. And every time he does something, he has the potential to just rip off 50 yards on you. And it's, you know, and he's doing it multiple times a game, and nobody knows what to do about this. Nobody can stop him. It's, you know, he's, I always feel like fantasy points, even though it's like a really weird way to measure it, it's almost like the best way to like track a player's impact, you know, across the board, whether, you know, like if you look at just rushing yards, you're comparing him to other rushers. If you're looking at just passing yards, you're comparing him to other passers. But, you know, when you compare him to everybody, Lamar Jackson is having a record-setting season. He's, you know, that he's scoring more points than, or he's outpacing Patrick Mahomes from last year. You know, both. You know, and he's doing it both with his legs and with his arms, and you know, with the Baltimore receiving core that doesn't have a lot of big names either. So, and not to say that they're scrubs, but I think it's pretty clear that that Lamar Jackson is kind of carrying the load here, and it's. Yeah, he's making a lot of teams look silly. This Ravens team beat the Patriots. They gave the Patriots their first loss. So, so that's how good of a team this is. We'll get to see him against the Niners defense coming up pretty soon. So, that'll be another test. I'm pretty sure he's going to pass that one with flying colors, as he has done with every single test this year, and in every single test from last year, once he finally took the reins over from Joe Flacco. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, the only wait and see question left is how far can he take this? And, you know, is he taking this all the way to the Super Bowl? And statistically, like, how many single season records is he going to shatter this year? You know, he ripped off a run the other week that I think, it was more of a straight line run, but I think it turned out that it was longer than it was a touchdown run that was longer than any Michael Vick run in history. So, like, you know, that's the kind of name that you're talking about as a rusher. And you know, people are comparing him to Patrick Mahomes as a passer, or at least, you know, when you talk about statistical production. So if he's doing that on both aspects of those games, like there's no way to game plan for it, because it really doesn't matter how, if he can beat you in both ways, it's gonna be tough to game plan for. So I'm a little bit scared for the 49ers. They've already lost a game to the aforementioned Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, and Lamar Jackson is probably going to give them even bigger fits. That's more wait and see, but I think we can confidently state that Lamar Jackson is for real.
Oh, excuse me. The like kind of interesting thing here is with everybody in such like high regards of Lamar Jackson and this kind of Baltimore team, people are kind of like, you're starting to get to the point where people are picking at little things, and then the bigger thing that is happening is people are asking, is this the greatest Baltimore team that we've had? If they go to a Super Bowl, that is. And I think that's always kind of an interesting setting when you get to worry, wonder about history in a sense, but I never try to wonder about history before history is complete. So, you know, if they make it to the
Well,
Super Bowl, then I think that discussion is interesting.
I think if you look at the history of Baltimore Ravens quarterbacks, and so we're talking about a history that dates back to, I think, the 1995 season, when they first moved from Cleveland, and so, like, just the Cleveland got to keep their history. So it's technically an expansion franchise that started in 1995. So, you know, the two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks were Trent Dilfer and Joe Flacco. And so, like, we've talked about Joe Flacco to death about, you know, how controversial he is, whether he's an elite quarterback or not. You know, he finally ran him out of town. Trent Dilfer was, despite the fact that he won a Super Bowl, he was replaced the next year.
Yeah.
By Elvis Kerback, who wasn't even that good. And, since then, I think maybe Steve McNair's one season with them. I think by the end of this season, Lamar Jackson might stake his claim as the best quarterback in Baltimore Ravens history. Maybe that's a hot take, maybe not, but it's not a long history, and there's been a lot of bad quarterbacks coming through, and then a lot of years of Joe Flacco being solid, maybe not overwhelming.
Yeah.
He got the job done.
All right, let's move on to our big stories of the week. Start with this first one. Tua, Alabama quarterback.
Tua Tagovailoa is done. It's when I say done, I mean he dislocated his hip.
Yeah.
Dislocated and fractured his hip in the middle of a blowout win against Mississippi State towards the end of the second quarter. That there's disputes about whether he wanted to run the 2-minute drill or whether the coach just left him in, but it's kind of like, do you really need to leave this guy in while you're up by this much on a team that's not very good? Especially since he just came back from an ankle injury that he sustained in October. That was a bad enough injury that it required surgery. This is scary both for this young man's career, because people are talking about Bo Jackson in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very similar injury to that.
And for Bo Jackson, it ended his career, which is why it's why it carries so much weight. This is,
for the non-sports fan, and I'm a little bit too young for Bo Jackson. I don't really know a whole lot about his career, but he's a guy that's good enough to have a video game named after him. He only played 4 seasons in the NFL, but he's also a 2-sport athlete. He played football and baseball. His character in Tecmo Bowl is unstoppable. Like, he's known for that. He's known for, for his video games, and this is a guy who had a 4-year career and he had that much of an impact. And this is an injury bad enough to cut his career short at that moment. Not just his football career, but his baseball career as well. It's a bad injury, and yeah, we've had medical advances since then, but I think when Bo Jackson dislocated his hip, he popped it back in himself, which you are not supposed to do. Luckily Tua did not do that, which unfortunately for him meant that he was screaming in pain the entire time that they were carting him off. It's for a guy with a history of injuries, a guy who I think had he come out last year would have been the presumptive number one overall pick. I feel like every week we talk about a different guy being presumptive number one overall pick, but like people for like the Miami Dolphins this year, they were so bad that it's tank for Tua. He's one of the names that gets thrown out there as one of the guys that is so talented that your team needs to lose as many games as possible so you can draft this guy. He could have gone out. He could have left college last year, he didn't. And so now he's not making money. He's made a total of $0 throughout his entire career, despite being, I don't know, maybe some people would argue that he is the greatest quarterback in college football history.
Yeah,
and he gets nothing from that. Just absolutely nothing. If he doesn't get drafted or if he, I mean, even if he falls in the draft because people are concerned about injuries, then that's instant loss of money because you are paid according to where you get drafted. And so, you know, he's going to lose, you know, even if he falls a couple spots, that's, you know, that's on the order of several million dollars that he's going to miss out on over the course of his first contract. And, you know, like all this risk for what? So he can practice a 2-minute drill against Mississippi State when the team is up 35-7 in the second quarter. That's,
yeah, it all screams unnecessary. Like it just screams like it was unnecessary. It was unneeded. It was showing off. It was showboating, and you got hurt for it. Like, so,
and yeah, I mean, there's that layer, and then there's the layer of, you know, if you were doing all that unnecessary stuff in the NFL, at least the guy would still get paid if he got hurt. But
yeah,
in this case, nope, he gets nothing. I mean, hopefully he did get paid under the table. Like that's what I'm hoping for every time a bad injury like this happens. Like, I hope there were some shenanigans going on to get this guy at least a little bit of money so that they got paid at least a little bit for the work they did and the sheer large volume of money that they generated for other people. I hope they got some sort of cut from it. But yeah, this is very unfortunate, and yeah, just another reminder that football is dangerous and that college football and college sports in general are a pretty exploitative system, and the players assume all the risk here, and his luck ran out.
Yeah,
basically.
Let's move back to the NFL and talk about another travesty. Miles Garrett of the Browns.
Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. Got into
another travesty in general this year.
Yeah. Got into an altercation with the quarterback of the Steelers, Mason Rudolph, which led to a very weird fight in which Miles Garrett hit Mason Rudolph with his own helmet. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a league that is very focused on head injuries, the helmet is supposed to protect you from things like that. B, you are not allowed to take off your own helmet while you're on the field, which he didn't do, but like that's how serious they are about this kind of thing, that like while you're on the field, you wear your protective gear, even if it's the end of a play or something. Like, you, until you get off the field, you cannot take your helmet off. You are certainly not supposed to rip off other people's helmets, although sometimes over the course of play, sometimes people bump into each other and then the helmets fly off. It happens sometimes, but that's not what happened here. Mason Rudolph was getting pulled to the ground by Miles Garrett. I think he objected to how roughly Garrett did that. So then he grabbed Garrett's helmet and tried to rip it off himself. He was unsuccessful. Garrett did the same thing to him and was successful, and then added the extra bit of, if you can imagine, if you can imagine like a catapult launching a projectile, it's kind of like that, except Garrett was holding on to the projectile the entire time. It was like an overhead swing like that.
Yeah.
And he connected with the top of Mason Rudolph's head, kind of with the edge of the helmet, the edge of like the bottom of the helmet. So getting hit in the head always hurts. Getting hit in the head with a hard thing like a helmet probably hurts more. Getting hit with that while a very large athletic man is swinging it probably hurts a lot more. Yeah, luckily, I guess Rudolph seems to be okay, even though he kind of started it. And then on top of that, this incident sparked basically the benches the equivalent of a bench clearing brawl in baseball, which then led to Steelers offensive lineman Maurice Pouncey getting basically attacking Garrett while he was on the ground, and Browns defensive tackle Larry Ogunjobi also got involved in it. So Pouncey got suspended 3 games. Ogunjobi got suspended 1 game. Miles Garrett if this was just a normal fight, he probably would have been suspended a couple games, but since it's a league that's trying to focus on head injuries and trying to limit that and doing something that so egregiously goes against that, they decided that he is going to be suspended indefinitely, sounds like it's a lot, but it's indefinitely basically means probably until the end of the season, and then at some point they'll let you back in, but they just don't know when they're going to decide to do that. So it could be after a year, it could be basically it's until the hype about this, until the bad PR about this dies down, you're going to be sitting. And then once everybody kind of forgets about this a little bit, or everybody's calmed down, then we'll allow you to come back. So that's that kind of suspension. Garrett's going to appeal that suspension because he wants at least just like come up with a number and tell me that's how many games I'm going to be
at. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely taken a lot of responsibility for the incident. He put out a very well-worded apology. And I definitely feel like it's just kind of a mixture of like just a bad situation, and a lot of anger.
Rule number one of apologies, actually apologize to the person you hurt. You would think that's not a complicated thing, but yeah. You'd be surprised at the kind of shit people say when they're confronted with the bad things that they did. But I feel like Miles Garrett, like, you show him the replay of him swinging a helmet at another man's head, and it's kind of hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
It was bad enough that like people are talking about like, is this assault? Like, is like so much violence happens on a football field, but this like is, you know, is swinging a helmet at another person? Does that cross the realm into, you know, into violence? Like if a baseball player gets into a fight, that's one thing. If a baseball player brings the bat with him into the fight, then that's, you know, then that's assault. You know, if a hockey player hits another player with a hockey stick, then that's assault. So is this kind of the same thing? But it looks like Mason Rudolph is not going to press charges. Although there were reports that he was thinking of doing so. If you were wondering, did Mason Rudolph get any punishment for starting this whole thing? Not yet, but apparently there's reports that a fine is coming. But I really don't know. It was kind of a bad look, and everybody was pretty upset that he hasn't been punished for kicking off this whole thing, because he basically tried to do, aside from the hitting a dude with his own helmet thing, he did try to rip off Miles Garrett's helmet and but sparked this whole thing. It's a little fishy.
Both teams have also been fined too, which I don't know if we mentioned.
$250,000 each team, which I think is bullshit. Because they print so much money that it's almost a nothing thing for them. I mean, it's great for the charities that get this money, but I almost feel like these fines should come from the salary cap, like, because then it actually affects your team's ability to perform on the field. But $250,000 is like, that's like a minimum contract for a player. So it's hardly anything for an incident that makes the league look very, very bad. It's certainly not a good look for the I would never let my kid play football crowd. the football is too violent crowd. Just another reminder of how unsafe the game is. Even though this is just a fight, it's not a regular fight, and one that can scare off a lot of people.
Definitely. All right. I think we move on from there. We have two more stories to talk about. Probably the biggest story of the week, Colin Kaepernick getting to do workouts for some NFL teams this previous Saturday. So the NFL reached out to Colin Kaepernick and decided to schedule some workouts and have him come and show off for some teams, allegedly through the help of Jay-Z and Roger Goodell. But we don't really know much of what's come from this, but it's already starting to look like more of a dog and pony show kind of a thing than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. Obviously, I think we're going to probably sound a little bit biased when we talk about this, just because we've been stumping for Colin Kaepernick this entire time.
Yeah.
Every time some mediocre to awful quarterback gets to take the field, it's just more and more evidence that a perfectly competent quarterback like Colin Kaepernick just that there's shenanigans keeping him out of the league. He settled his collusion case with the NFL, a couple years ago, which basically covers accusations of collusion for, I think, the 2017 season or like a certain several year period, but it doesn't cover anything that happened between then and now. The NFL kind of surprised him with this, on Tuesday and said, this Saturday we're doing a workout for you, which is kind of unusual. Usually the NFL doesn't schedule workouts for specific players. It's like the players kind of schedule their own things and then whatever teams can come watch. I think it was Adam Schefter that said that the league kind of got sick of teams asking the league about his availability, only for them to just have to tell them, well, why don't you go ask him yourself? Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like so many teams were asking about him that, but like they're also kind of afraid to reach out themselves because they're afraid that, like, oh, so and so team reached out to Colin Kaepernick, and then that brings the whole hate train that follows. All of his haters come in and say, like, how dare you schedule a workout with him? So I think if they kind of get the league to do it, then it kind of takes some of the pressure off of him. It's just like, okay, the league is organizing a workout with this quarterback who happens to be somewhat controversial, but the league is organizing this, so we're doing our due diligence and sending one of our scouts to go look, instead of a we're going to go reach out to this guy ourselves on our own decision, which in a way is pretty fucking cowardly. Between that and then, Jay-Z, wanting to exert he's partnering with the league regarding some social justice issues. So I think he wanted to, attach this to his name. And then I think Roger Goodell, who just kind of wanted everybody to just stop talking to him about Colin Kaepernick. And so they scheduled this thing, but like they gave him such short notice, and Kaepernick's team wanted to, like, it's weird that they're doing this on a Saturday, which is, the day before most NFL games. Usually this stuff happens in the middle of the week. They wouldn't tell him what receivers he'd be throwing to. They wouldn't move it to a different Saturday.
Yeah.
If they were to insist that they were going to do it on a Saturday. So we basically got 4 days to work out all this stuff, and you know, and all the legal stuff when it comes to waivers, like injury waivers and stuff. Although it looks like Kaepernick's, the waiver that Kaepernick wanted to sign basically absolved everybody. He assumed basically all risk for injuries, but the waiver the NFL wanted him to sign basically wanted him to give up any and all claims, demands, actions, causes of action, suits, grievances, costs, losses, expenses, damages, injuries, illnesses, and losses, including death caused by, arising out of, occurring during, or related directly or indirectly to the workout, players present at the facility, and any medical treatment or services rendered in connection with or necessitated by the player's participation in the workout. So it's just like no claims whatsoever.
Yeah.
Injury related or not related to anything remotely related to this workout. And that is like a gigantic fucking umbrella to say you can't, like, you can't pursue any legal action regarding any of this. Which means, like, you know, like, say he shows up to this workout and then teams start talking to each other about like why they shouldn't sign him. You know, like, teams are not supposed to be talking to each other or coordinating each other about that sort of thing. You're supposed to be worrying about your own team, and that's it. You can't coordinate with another team. That's collusion. Even if it's just two teams, even if it's not the entire league colluding together, that's part of why Kaepernick was able to get the settlement that he got, because there was audio tape of teams talking about how big of a situation he caused, and you know, and how it's affected the way the president talked about the league and how it's hurting business and all that. So because they talked about it with each other, because they coordinated, that's collusion. And so, you know, getting him to sign this waiver is like, you know, that would absolve them of any collusion related to this workout. You know, from the NFL's perspective, it's like, well, we're doing all of this for you. You, like, you know, sign our thing, like, or we could just not do this for you. And so, like, they act like they're doing him a favor. And I think, you know, Kaepernick is not very trusting of the NFL after everything that's happened the last couple of years. Why would he? You know, so it's like two sides that are coming at it from opposite sides and, you know, have a lot of ground to cover before they meet somewhere in the middle. And yet they have to do it in 4 days. And so, you know, they were, you know, they scheduled this thing at the Atlanta Falcons practice facility. It, you know, all this legal shit fell apart. And so Kaepernick just kind of went and did his own workout at a local high school. And so apparently there were like 25 teams that were going to attend the original workout. And then seven ended up kind of following him to this other place that he decided to work out where he conducted his own. And, you know, and all the scouts who showed up there basically said the same thing. Like, he's ready to play in the NFL. He's still got it. His arm still looks good. He's still at least somewhat accurate. He was never that accurate of a passer, but, you know, like, he's still a serviceable quarterback, just as they thought he was several years ago. And, but I'm afraid that this is going to turn out into like the same sort of thing that teams have been doing all this time. Like, you know, somebody will say, yeah, he deserves to be on a team, but, you know, they won't go sign him themselves. And, you know, apparently the seven teams that were there were the Detroit Lions, who Matthew Stafford is injured right now, and Jeff Driskel is their backup. So, you know, Kaepernick would be an upgrade there. Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, Kaepernick would obviously be his backup, you know, and probably not get a whole lot of time. Philadelphia and San Francisco are pretty set at the starter position, so he'd be a backup there. The Jets, Tennessee, and Washington. I guess Tennessee's kind of doing okay with Ryan Tannehill, but I mean, they're looking, they've pretty much given up on Marcus Mariota. I don't know what the hell Washington's doing. The Jets are also struggling. So, yeah, I mean, all these teams could use a serviceable quarterback. And But I would be shocked if any of them signed him. I feel like anti-Kaepernick people are going to be like, oh, he pulled another stunt here. The league tried to do all this stuff for him. And now he's pulling more shenanigans and going and working out somewhere else. Pro-Kaepernick people like us are probably going to be saying like, well, they, you know, this whole thing is weird. They put all these roadblocks there and it looks like they're trying to trick him into signing this really weird waiver. And I think everybody on all sides could probably agree that, you know, if like, why go through all this trouble and rush it so badly?
I mean, it's, I see. Yeah. Cause I now I feel like anything I say comes from some kind of like, the league is bad and whatever, but it's like,
I mean, then again, like what has the NFL done to earn your trust?
Yeah.
About anything at this point. That's, I mean, I think that's a fair question to ask in the context of anything the NFL does. Even if you back up out of that, go ahead and continue.
It just seemed so railroady. It just seemed like it was a sense of saving face, and it just seemed like it just ended up not being done well. So, I don't know, man. Hopefully something good comes from it, but I doubt that it will. Like you said, it just is going to be, it's just going to, It literally, all it did was it got this talked about on a bunch of news outlets and our podcast, you know, like, and I feel like that's the most that's going to come from that.
Which, I mean, I've been sick of talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I hope eventually the story ends with Colin Kaepernick is on an NFL team. Maybe he doesn't get to play. Maybe, you know, maybe he's just somebody's backup, but he's a man who's talented enough to be on a team. He's, you know, apparently a perfectly fine teammate. So like, you know, he carries controversy with him, but that's, you know, some of that is like, how much of that circus that follows him is the circus that we create ourselves. And when I say we, I guess, I mean, like the media, including podcasts like ours, it's not that much of a circus if you just, you know, ignore his his protest. Like, if you don't like his protest, you just don't look at it. Like, it's not that hard to ignore. It's
he's
just a guy kneeling during an anthem. Like, if
that in itself is the whole issue. You know what I mean? Like. It should be something that is trivial, but people decided to attach so much to it, and it just, I don't know, it grew beyond itself, I think. So yeah,
it's beyond itself to the point where it's like the league has plenty of domestic abusers, plenty of people that have committed violent crimes, non-violent crimes. People like that, it has people like Antonio Brown who are, you know, detrimental to their team in several ways, and people are still willing to give those guys a chance. But Colin Kaepernick, who has committed no crimes, he's got a clean record. He does a ton of stuff for the community. And is a perfectly serviceable player that is better than a lot of players at his position, and he doesn't he gets a sniff, he gets the token sniff from other teams, but nobody is willing to go all the way and just sign him to not even that big of a contract at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
let this guy be your backup. Like, yeah, fine.
Let it be. As we shall let it be, because I think for now we put this on the shelf until something significant happens in this story, because there will definitely be a lot of mini micro things that will come of this that every media outlet will try to stretch and stretch and stretch. But we shall overcome. And we shall talk about something that is actually a lot more dangerous, the Houston Astros.
Yeah. And one thing I learned while reading about all this is just like other baseball teams really fucking hate the Astros. And it's not like, oh, they're good and we hate them. It's like nobody likes the way the Astros conduct business. Like everybody thinks they're assholes.
Yeah. Well,
there's the whole thing with Brandon Taubman and who was a guy in their front office who I don't think we covered this enough, but he was accused of or not like he made some comments targeting the female reporters that were near him that were, you know, he was. It seems on the surface like kind of innocuous, but like he was basically celebrating how the fact that they got Osuna on the roster, who is a player that was embroiled in domestic abuse scandals, and so it was like a controversial move at the time, and he chose that time to rub that in their faces while they were celebrating. Making the World Series.
Yeah.
And you know, when he didn't actually do anything at the time to earn that kind of praise. He's been an okay player throughout the season, or maybe even a good player throughout the season. But, you know, at that moment, like he had not performed that well in that game. But this executive, Brandon Taubman, chose to single him out in front of these particular reporters, in order to kind of rub that in their faces. And so there was a whole thing about it. Taubman, either he resigned or he got fired. I can't exactly remember, but you know, they kind of settled that except the league is going to do an investigation into all that. But part of their investigation is now going to include allegations of electronic sign stealing. And by signs, I mean like not the things that tell you where to go, but like the hand signals that catchers
basically
use to communicate with pitchers.
Yeah, basically play calls. Being pretty much something that the Patriots got accused of as well, stealing the other team's play call book, more or less, by recording them and figuring out what plays that they were going to call so that they can make on like in second adjustments to what was happening based on the information that they had gathered in a way that is illegal and is considered cheating. So this was a thing that started to become more and more widely known. The Yankees had accused them of doing things that seemed to be that seemed to signal players during the ALCS. The Nationals, who had heard about this, ended up using a very complex set of pitching signals that they have never used before during the World Series, just to make sure that the Astros could not steal their signals. So, yeah, this is a very, 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 like, kind of big no-no, and amongst the list of things that you already named, this is not something that you then want to have added to that.
So, I guess let's cover like what is and is not legal, within the rules. Like in all sports at some level, you can't really help. Like you can visually look and watch somebody make a hand signal to somebody else. And you see it enough times, you're going to figure out what it means. So like, that's not prohibited. You are allowed to just like mentally interpret each other's signs.
Yeah.
You are allowed to watch game film and try to figure out what those things mean. That's done after the fact. What the Patriots did was they recorded practices. They spied on other teams and then used that information. So that's just because it was spying, that's what made that against the rules. That's why they call it Spygate. What the Astros are doing, also, like, one thing that is legal if you have a guy on second base who is in clear view of the pitcher's crotch, or not the pitcher's crotch, the catcher's crotch,
yeah,
where they're usually making the signals, that guy on second base can relay that information to the batter. Like, that's legal. That's all being kind of manually done, organically done, on the fly. What is not legal is using electronics to help you do this, using any form of technology. So what the Astros are accused of doing, and what some former Astros players have said that they have done as recently as 2017 and maybe even more recently, but these are former players, so they don't necessarily know what they're doing now. But they had a camera, an unsanctioned camera, in the outfield that was, you know, in the outfield of the Astros' home stadium, Minute Maid Park. And that camera was pointed at the catcher. It was there in order to be able to spot these signs, most cameras, like if you walk around a stadium, there's like all the screens that are showing the game, like they're all on like a slight delay. This screen that the Astros were using was not on a delay, and because nobody knew about this camera, and so this camera basically fed the video feed to like a backstage area, like deeper inside the dugout, but like further deep, like maybe near the locker room. A person there would watch the screen, and then whatever they figured out what the signs were, then they would make some sort of audible signal. Like one of the examples that they use in this article is like somebody would bang on a drum really loud. And it's loud enough that that some people have gone back after the fact and watched videos, and like they've heard this drumming sound, and they've been able to match up the drumming sound with the type of pitch that the pitcher is about to throw. So it's, you know, either doing that, or like the Yankees accuse the Astros of making whistling noises,
yeah,
from the dugout. And that's something that like a pitcher can spot after it happens a couple times, that like he hears, you know, somebody making two whistles every time he throws a fastball or something. Usually they have a somewhat convoluted system where like they change up the signs every so often. It does require a lot of effort, but then if you have technology assisting you when you do this, then it becomes a lot easier. When you have a runner on second base, you know you have to watch out for that. So like there's an expectation that when somebody's there, that the signal conversation is no longer private. But when you are hiding a camera in the outfield, then all of a sudden it's no longer, you know, they don't know that that's there. So they don't know, teams don't know that they have to change up their signals. They're not aware that you are cheating.
Yeah.
It's a pretty shady practice. And I think it's one that you could almost argue that like everybody's doing it, but the Astros got caught, but also kind of goes back to like, it seems like everybody fucking hates the Astros, and this is a part of it. So like maybe they are the worst of it. I guess luckily they weren't able to cheat their way into a World Series win, because the Nationals were smart enough to use a really convoluted system to thwart this.
At that point, right, that's so much more dangerous if they did, right? Because then we start to have the conversation of, do you take a World Series away?
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember when the Astros did win the World Series a couple of years ago, and whether it's whether it was before or after 2017, but it might, like, this investigation might require them to actually look back that far. But I mean, some new regulations came in the 2019 season to kind of, like, emphasize that, like, no, you are not allowed to use technology for the purpose of sign stealing. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, at the very least, if they're continuing to do this now, after those very explicit rules came into effect, then you know, more punishments will come down. I think if something like that were to happen, I think the team would try to argue that, you know, this is just a select few players using the system, and it's not widespread. But it's not a good look. And now everybody's, now that this thing is kind of exposed to the public, it's now not just like kind of a hidden secret that, like, all the teams talk about how the Astros cheat. It's now all the fans know the Astros cheat. And it'll kind of follow them forever. Just like people are still making jokes about the Patriots and the way they spy, and how, you know, any time the Patriots can find an advantage to cheat, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, all that stuff about the Patriots. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many Super Bowls they win, everybody's going to talk about them cheating. And, you know, and I think people are going to start talking about the Astros in the same sort of way.
Oh, yeah. No, that's big. That's big coming down the pipeline. Like, the Astros are going to be kind of, like, they're going to become that team that everybody always just assumes. Yeah. So I think, in lieu of DJ, I'm not being here. Big question. What do you think should be done if it is proven that the Astros have been doing this, that they have been call stealing?
I think first, these types of punishments always come down on the manager, or the head coach, that, you know, like, well, when Sean Payton and the Saints had their whole Bounty Gate thing, where like they were paying players like small incentives to injure other players. I think Sean Payton claimed he didn't know anything about this, but he still got suspended for an entire year, because it kind of happened under his watch. And so the Astros, like, that will fall on the manager at some point. So it'll probably be like a year long suspension for him. I don't know how much they're going to punish the players that participated in this, or whether they're ever going to actually be able to figure out, like, what players did and did not participate in this. I don't think players are going to snitch on each other. Draft picks are always a good thing to take away whenever something like this happens. When you take away draft picks, you hurt a team's future when you do that. So doing that for taking away their first round picks or whatever, like, it, the baseball draft is so long and weird that it's kind of hard to tell, like, how many draft picks to take away, over how many years, like, what is an adequate punishment.
See, I feel like with baseball, unlike most things, I feel like you should just be annexed from the draft. If something you did is just that bad, I feel like you should just not be allowed to pick.
I would agree without that level of punishment, especially for, like, cheating things. Like, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves so many years ago tried to circumvent the salary cap, and I think they had their first round picks for, like, the next several years confiscated, but I think they still had second round picks. Yeah. But I think it would make, I mean, to me, I think they should just, like, your entire draft is gone. Like, you don't get any of these guys, and, or you don't get to pick at all if the draft hasn't happened yet. And so you have to fill out your roster some other way. and you don't get these nice, cheap young players to exploit and manipulate their service time and all the other shenanigans they pull. You know, and this Astros team got good because they tanked and, you know, and then got a lot of good young players and then managed to get other good players from around the league to fill out the roster. So like hurting them in the draft is, you know, is a pretty big, is a pretty decent way to hurt them.
Yeah.
Hurt their future and, you know, disincentivize doing this kind of cheating in the future, and send a warning to other teams.
Yeah. See, that's the big thing I always want to see is I want to see the league punish somebody significantly enough that it makes other teams who may be doing things like this, or maybe doing things close to this, or maybe thinking about doing things like this when they hear about it, stop thinking about it.
And I always feel like no sport does this, but you should take away cap space.
Yeah, that's another thing I was thinking about. I was like, your cap space should be limited too. Like,
it's a soft cap in Major League Baseball, and their luxury tax is so goddamn weak that, like, I'm struggling to figure out why the Yankees don't just have a $1 billion payroll.
Yeah.
Because the penalties for going over the, you know, the small salary cap are like 10%, compared to the NBA, which is like 100. It starts at like 100% and then escalates the further you get into the luxury tax, to where it like doubles and triples. And then if you're over the luxury tax for too many years in a row, then those double again. Then, you know, like the baseball luxury tax is weak, so I don't know how well a salary cap or luxury tax penalty will help. And I mean, if somebody gets hit with one of those penalties, then I mean, it's just going to cost them more money. So it's basically equivalent to a fine at that point. And, you know, you're talking about like a $5 million fine for a team that makes a lot more money than that. So kind of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. But I feel like it still hurts them in a good sense. You know what I mean? Like, it's not significantly dangerous. It doesn't put them out in the street, but it is something that draws attention in the way that we're talking about, where it makes people wary of doing things like that in the future. And I think that's what you always want. You want to make people wary of how much more severe it would be for them.
It needs to be a significant enough penalty that 2 or 3 years from now, they're no longer in contention for the World Series. And like, maybe they can hold on for the next few years, but they're no longer in contention a couple years from now, and people can point back to the punishment you made as this is what caused them to fall from the top. And, you know, this is what caused their collapse. And it needs to be that punitive. And
yeah, so
I feel like we're, like, at this point, we're just like, we're out for blood. Yeah. And we're just trying to think of like,
In a sense, we are.
Take away their children.
I think we've been so, like, we've seen people get away with so much shit in just the history of sports and sports itself, and it's like you want to start to see more significant punishments come down from the pipeline, but you know you never really will. So you start to dream up these scenarios like this. That being said, that is going to be it for the boys over at Sports Odds and Ends. The Astros are going to head up on to the wait and see, because we will have to wait and see what happens with them.
Tell us your dream punishments on Twitter. You can find me at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM.
Yep.
And we'll head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find links to all these stories, videos if you want to watch a dude getting hit in the head with his own helmet, or Austin Rivers wildly gesturing for the refs to give his dad a technical foul. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support us financially. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week. back.